This weekend, the Family Arena is going to be host to a brand new show from Cirque du Soleil. I believe it'll be the first one in which they've ever used the Zamboni to prepare for the show. It is, because it's their first show on ice. It's called Crystal, and every Cirque du Soleil show includes live music performed by actual human beings. There's no playback. There's no soundtrack coming off of digital files. The man who's responsible for the band this time around is their musical director, Stephen Bach, who's in the studio with me today. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, Steve lives in Springfield, Missouri.
That is correct. So, we moved back from Vegas about 6 months ago.
Were you in another Cirque show in Las Vegas?
I was. I was in a show called Zarkana at the Aria Hotel.
Uh-huh. I think that's one of the ones I haven't seen. I think that one and Ka.
Unfortunately, you never will now with the Zarkana. But
what happened?
We closed after a very nice four-year run. They decided, the hotel decided they wanted to transform the theater into convention space.
Okay.
It's a long story and a sad story for me, but.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to Missouri. But you're not actually going to be here for like the next 2 years. You're going to be on tour with the show, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Speaking of transforming things, how difficult is it to transform an arena like the Family Arena or the other places that you've played in the first three or four gigs on this tour into whatever it's going to be on Saturday and Sunday?
It's very complex. It's a 2-day project. The load-in occurred, I think, sometime in the early hours of Monday morning, and by Tuesday night, they had it ready.
Mm-hmm.
17 semis filled with gear, basically.
Wow. And how many performers are in this show?
We have 40 in the cast and about 60 support crew who help us with lighting and sound and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, wow. That's a big road company to move around. Now, I know that you're not one of the acrobats.
Unfortunately.
Well, you wish you could be?
I always introduce myself as a trapeze artist. And I see how long that'll play. Usually they take a good look at me and go, really, what do you do?
Was there a time in your life when you wanted to do that? You went to a circus when you were a young boy and said, oh, man, I want to fly through the air.
The kid in me still wants to run around and jump and get on ice skates and roller skate and turn upside down.
Yeah.
It's never really been my, let's say, forte.
Yeah. You know, I think when I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, there was a George Plimpton TV special in which he went behind the scenes at a circus and he wanted to learn how to be a trapeze artist. And they taught him how to go up and climb the rope, which was not easier than he thought, you know, the ladder rope,
right?
The rope ladder, and get up there and learn how to do that. And just to learn how to do the transfer from the bar that you swing out on to the catcher and then swing back and do that. He wasn't going to do any somersaults or anything like that.
Right.
He said it was the hardest thing I had to do. And this is a guy who played football with the Detroit Lions for Paper Lion.
That's right.
That was the most amazing thing.
It's really awe-inspiring what the acrobats and the skaters are doing this show.
It's, yeah.
And dangerous.
Is there a trapeze in Crystal?
There is. It's a static trapeze with a very talented, very strong man hanging from it,
mm-hmm.
combined with some on the ice action. One of our performers is just a super flexible, amazing acrobat, and she goes up and down onto the trapeze on the ice, up to the trapeze, doing just mind-boggling stuff.
So she's doing trapeze with skates on?
Yes. No, she doesn't have skates on the ice. She is not a skater. So we have half acrobats, half skaters. Uh-huh. Some of the acrobats now do perform on skates for part of the show, which mm-hmm. is amazing because they basically just learned how to ice skate.
Yes. I know a lot of these people who are in shows like this, they don't necessarily come from a place where skating is part of their background.
Exactly.
So they really have to be taught from day one.
Yes, from day one.
Here's how to lace your skates tight enough so that your ankles don't melt.
Measuring their feet, the whole thing. It's really incredible. And one of our musicians, I'm proud to say, has improved and learned how to skate so well that he is a featured, not exactly a featured skater, but he does skate on the ice during one of the acts playing clarinet.
Really?
Yes.
Which leads me to my next question. Is the band on ice?
The band is on ice, not the entire time. We have a little... I don't know what you call it. Our home base is behind the stage, so you don't see us for a large part of the show. But each of us comes out for a couple of solo appearances. We have a violinist. Her name is Lucine. Tremendously talented. concerto level. I mean, just a great violinist. Wow. She appears twice in solo roles accompanying the acts. Mm-hmm. Our clarinetist, his name is Camilo Mota. He plays clarinet. He skates. He plays guitar. So you'll see him playing guitar. Mm-hmm. He plays saxophone. And then there's one scene that all three of us, including myself, make an appearance.
Yeah.
On what I like to refer to as the super piano.
Uh-huh.
It's 176 key extravaganza.
Well, let me do my math here. That would be twice as many keys as an 88 key piano, a regular one.
That's right.
Okay.
88 times two, a very large, specially built, crazy piano.
Does that mean you have 11 more octaves to play with?
Yes and no. I have a seat that literally glides. I can't believe I'm in show business, really.
Yeah.
But yes, I play both sides of this giant piano. It's kind of, it doesn't exactly extend. It's like I'm playing two different sounds. So I start out on one side, slide over to the other side. Now, all the while being pushed on the ice by some skaters.
Mm-hmm.
So the motion of that, it's a little bit like being at sea and trying to play piano. And the first time I did it, it was really pretty.
Do you have a motion sickness problem, Steve?
Well, I didn't know I did. But as it turns out, I do have a bit of one.
You know, so I think the late Keith Emerson would have said, no, I'm not doing that. That's crazy talk.
Big Keith Emerson fan.
Are you?
No, he never would have done it. He never would have done it. But while I'm out on the piano, Camilo and Lucine are both also sitting on the piano.
Uh-huh.
A couple of the stars of the show also get on the piano. Camilo switches to acoustic guitar at one point. Lucine's playing her electric violin, and we're just traveling all over the ice. So,
wow.
So the musicians are very visible, which to me is, well, it's extremely important for Cirque du Soleil and for the audience to see that we're live.
Yeah, that's one of the remarkable things about it, is not just what the people in spandex are doing all over the stage, or in this case, all over the ice, but what the musicians are creating live there as well, contemporaneously, which leads me to the question, if you're backstage, how can you accompany people you can't see? Do you have a TV monitor?
We all have extensive monitors, and so we can see pretty much very clearly. Especially for me, it's important because a lot of the things musically are timed to what's happening on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So I can always see what's happening. Plus, I'm always in touch through my in-ears with the general stage manager who's calling the show and letting me know in advance of any troubles and any sections which we have to extend or skip or whatever it is. So
don't play the acrobat song now. It's a trapeze. They're going on now. Something happened to one guy's ankle. Something like that.
It's you almost got it to the letter.
Really?
It can literally be like that.
The show can be that fluid, so it could be changed because of something that happened backstage?
Well, it has to be. It has to be. It's more extending than skipping. For example, we're not ready yet, Steve. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing happens all the time.
We're going to need a 64-bar vamp, and we'll let you know if it has to be 128. Just keep going.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. And you'll see the music and what's happening on stage, and the video and the lighting is extremely coordinated, and it's a very high-tech show.
Tell me about creating the music for this. Are you involved in composing the songs that you're playing?
I am not the composer. There are several sections of the score that are a bit free, where I get to play kind of what I want extemporaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an actual composer. His name is Maxime Lepage. He's a guy from Montreal, fabulously talented.
Does he do all the Cirque shows?
He doesn't. He's just recently started to do a few. He's one of our newer composers of the Cirque, I don't know, you know, stable, as
mm-hmm.
it were.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very talented. The stuff he's written is really beautiful. He's cinematic in his composition. We are augmented sometimes by some tracks. You talked about digital, a little bit of digital. You will hear a big sound for the three of us, but we are the main part of the sound. But
right.
you'll hear the backing with it, and his orchestration is really just genius.
The thing that I've noticed over the years, and I've seen several of the Cirque shows, is that the music seems to never stop. I mean, each song just goes right into the next one, unless it's just the comedian coming out on stage and doing their thing, in which I guess you get a break. But are there individual titles for the songs you're playing?
Every song is usually titled the name of the act.
Okay.
In other words, all right, we're going to play juggling now. We're going to play hockey. We're going to play. It's very pedestrian until we do the soundtrack. And I've done this before in other Cirque shows. So those are what we call them. And then we do the soundtrack album, and all of a sudden it's called, you know, My Girlfriend is from Boise. I'm like, what song is that?
Well, that's juggling.
But, you know, so I don't know how it gets there, but it does.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about you, because I looked up your bio today.
Oh, good.
And you and I have something in common, which was a love for the jazz group Return to Forever.
Oh, yes.
And you actually got to tour with Stanley Clark, who was the bass player in that group.
That's correct.
For what, a few months or a couple of years?
A couple of years.
Wow. What's life like on tour with somebody at the top of the jazz world, which he was?
Well, you have to remember back in the, this is a long time ago, in the 80s.
Yeah, well, I'm old too.
Okay. My point is that jazz rock was big.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like now you go to a jazz club and there's, you know, 13 people there,
yeah,
which is a sad state of affairs. Back then, and especially this style of music, the Mahavishnu Orchestra, Return to Forever.
Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock.
We were rock stars.
Yes.
And it was the greatest musical education of my life, or among the top. Those 2 years with Stanley, I got to really come into my own as a performer. And as part of an ensemble, it was a 4-piece. One of the tours was 8 pieces, and totally inspiring. The man Stanley is probably one of the best live performers I've ever seen. He would walk over to the side of the stage, and it would be like, well, it was almost Elvis-like at that point.
Wow!
It was a sea of people reaching out to him.
Yeah,
and it was a fantastic touring with him.
Speaking of Herbie, he was in town here just about 6 weeks ago and played Powell Symphony Hall here. Thousands of people came out to see him, and he was doing old Headhunter stuff.
Oh yeah, that's it.
So that stuff still has legs too.
It does. It does.
Did you ever work with Flora?
Yes, I did.
Flora Purim and Ayerto, whose last name I don't know.
Ayerto Morera.
Yes.
Yes, I was fortunate enough to tour for a couple of years with them as well.
And I realize that 98% of my audience has no idea what we're talking about, but I care and you care, so let's have this conversation.
It was, you're talking about the best, you know, musically the best, the highest heights musically of really of my life, playing with people like that.
What a voice she had.
Incredible, incredible.
Yeah.
You go on YouTube, there's stuff that I did with them on tour in Brazil, and it was just great.
Okay, now,
I still hear from Ayerto on Facebook. We're friends. And
that's great.
We're still in touch.
Now, also on the Steve Buck
website?
Resume.
Okay.
Are two names that we would not normally put together. I mean, put them aside from Stanley and Flora and Ayerto, but here are two names I would not put together. Robbie Krieger of The Doors.
Yes.
And Andy Williams.
Yes.
You worked with both of these guys,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
Tell me a story about each, if you would.
I would be happy to. So Andy, hopefully some of your audience knows who Andy Williams is.
Yes. Anybody who's gone to Branson in the last 20 years would know about Andy Williams.
The people, the cast members in my show, most of them would not know because they're quite young.
Yep.
So Andy is, you know, one of the great pop singers in the style of Frank Sinatra, let's say, if people would know that name.
And also had his own primetime show for many years in the 70s.
The Andy Williams Christmas show was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure most people would recognize the most wonderful time of the year, that being his voice.
Do you think he's singularly responsible for the Christmas sweater?
It's possible. It's possible. He did bring it, yeah, it to a place where it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so working with him.
All right, so Andy was someone that I worked with in California in the, this was in the 80s. And it was a time when synthesizers were starting to being used more in pop music.
Mm-hmm.
And the first call I got to work with Andy was, hey, Andy tours with a full orchestra. We're thinking of eliminating the string section, hiring a violinist and you. I said, oh, okay, well, how would that work? Well, you'd bring along a synthesizer that sounds like strings.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd put a violinist on top of that. And there you go. So that was the beginning of my association with Andy. I literally got the music. This is the string orchestra music. You need to play that. And so it was a really quite an education.
How difficult is it to transpose sheet music that's written for strings to keyboard music?
It It was a bit of a learning process.
I bet.
And Andy himself helped me with it. He said, don't ever use the volume pedal when you're doing strings. Remember, strings just go, yeah. They don't, you know, that it makes it sound more realistic. Anyway, mm-hmm. Andy was my tutor.
Okay.
Anyway, so we worked together for a few years. And at one point he said, Steve, I'm going to build a theater in Branson. Of course, I said, what's Branson?
Yeah.
And he asked me to go with him. And at the time I was in L.A., but my family was looking for a change. And we moved to Branson and hired a band. And
you were there for 12 years.
And had a wonderful time with Andy. It was a great and a beautiful theater and a beautiful sound system. And,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing 12 shows at 2,000 seats, sold out a week.
We were
doing 6 days a week, two shows.
Holy cow.
And it was just Branson's heyday.
Yeah. You know?
And it was great. Great working with him. A very, very nice man.
Now, I know there's no Robbie Krieger Theater in Branson.
There should be.
So what was that like? When you work with Robbie, were you like a Doors cover band?
We kind of were. At first, Robbie, you know, he has his own projects where he's done more jazzy stuff. And so he was looking for somebody that could cover the Doors stuff and also a little bit more of an improviser. So I connected with him, and we got along well musically, and we started touring, mostly U.S., a lot of work, a lot of touring, including, you know, places like the Whiskey and, you know, mm-hmm. just very Stone Pony. We got to go to all these iconic rock clubs.
How odd is it to go back to Whiskey A Go-Go, the place the Doors started, or
right.
at least became super famous.
Yep.
And now you're playing with the Doors guitarist, Robbie Krieger.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. And Ray showed up. Manzarek showed up and said to Robbie, where's this kid you're telling me about?
Uh-huh.
It was crazy.
Did you get pushed aside for a song or two so
yes,
Ray could play?
Absolutely did. And I was happy to step aside. And Densmore showed up, too. They were all there. So we had... Yeah, it's rock history. You know,
yeah.
Robbie and I are quite close now. We talk, and he's just a fantastic guy. And he's playing. I did a few gigs with him this year earlier, and he's just playing better than ever. He's, you know, well into his 70s and just kills it every night. And his switch to mainly doing door stuff now. It's mainly he does just his stuff,
mm-hmm.
the good stuff. Well,
yeah.
You know, and it's a fun gig. Oh my God, it's fun.
What a career you've had.
I've been lucky.
And now in town is the musical director for Crystal, which is the first Cirque du Soleil show on ice. There are going to be two shows Saturday and two shows Sunday at the Family Arena in St. Charles. And I'll tell you what, we're just going to open up the phone lines here. Can I give away a pair of tickets, Julie?
Yes, let's give away tickets.
Okay? All right. You're going to fill the place. You don't need me to give these away. Don't worry.
I hope so.
Every seat is going to be filled for all four of these shows.
Oh, I hope so.
Because for people who don't know Cirque du Soleil, they should at least go and have the experience. I don't know when the last Cirque show was here in St. Louis, but it's probably been about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
I hope that people will go and check you out here. And we'll just take a random caller now.
Here,
314-969-KTRS, 1-888-550-KTRS, or *KTRS. Josh will pick up the phone and give you the tickets. And Steve, thanks for so much for coming in here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure to meet you. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.